Thanks for tuning in to What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by poet, author, artist, Barbie Angel, new to the panel as well, with Jay Sanders of Acoustic Syndicate and Creative Allies, veteran panelist Fred Mills, today talking about prohibition themes in music going from way back in the 20th century until the current day.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's, we still live in a day and time of prohibition of all kinds of different things. But from a musical point of view, if you go all the way back into the 20s and 30s when it was actually illegal, prohibition of alcohol, it was all over music and popular culture. I mean, just like today, back then you can look at the music and the art, the poetry, the writing, the books of the times and see what people in the society as a whole felt about what was going on. Underneath the surface, not in the headlines. This is the stuff that actually makes it into people's living rooms. And so back then, you know, Slim Galliard had all kinds of different references and all talking about what it really felt like to be alive in that time and to be in this age of repression against alcohol.
Well, the times are always reflected in popular culture anyway, and it's not surprising that, well, two things are not surprising. Number one, if you tell someone not to do something, they're going to want to go out and do it. And two, then they're going to want to celebrate it. In this case, they sing about it. I mean, think about when we get to the jazz era. All those guys were singing about, what was that song, Muggles, that Louis Armstrong Orchestra had a hit with. Muggles was not a Harry Potter reference in 1928, folks. It was slang for reefer. It was a song in 1933 by Cab Calloway, Reefer Man.
Hit That Jive Jack by Slim Galliard.
There you go.
It was a huge hit.
Yeah. Even Cole Porter had a song called I Get a Kick Out of You, and initially that was not a reference to perfume as the later and final recorded version of it was. So it just goes, well, here's a great one. You got to love this title. Who Put the Benzedrine in Mrs. Murphy's Ovaltine from 47 by Harry the Hipster Gibson. Now, you know, that's a mouthful, but that just shows you. They were being kind of blatant. Of course, their blatancy also made the jazz musicians targets for the police. It was sort of, you know, jazz was still kind of seedy and a lot of underworld connections and everything. So they were frequently targeted. You know, you'd know if you went to a jazz concert, you could bust the musicians afterwards if you were a pretty diligent policeman. So,
well, and a lot of them were playing at speakeasies,
yeah,
because
yeah,
that's
yeah.
where people were out. They were out. They were drinking. They were dancing. They were listening to jazz. I mean, the venue itself was something you had to speak easy about. Talk quietly.
It's pretty funny that jazz music has gone from that background to being considered American high art these days, isn't
yes.
it? I like the point you made at the beginning, too, about how there's always prohibition persistent through society in different forms and formats. There's always going to be things that right or wrong the government is going to feel like they've got to legislate and even play a little bit of a big brother.
Well, you can take prohibition on a bigger level too, because society itself, ethics and morality create their own forms of prohibition
yeah,
with it
right.
in different types of culture, and then people react to that. The more you repress anything, the more, like the point you made, people are going to react to that.
Of course, then you get to like the 50s, and there was people, everything was totally sanitized. It's like the forces of prohibition finally had their era where, these things, we shall not speak their names. And so you have all this sanitized rock and roll and pop and everything. And I'm sure there was a lot of stuff bubbling beneath the surface. We all know that the 50s was an era of repression, but there was a lot kind of going on under the scenes. And as we get toward the Mad Men era, when all this stuff kind of comes out like a bubbling cauldron. And sure enough, if anybody watches Mad Men, they sort of throw out a few tips about the era that's about to come, because sure enough, as soon as the Beatles hit and the British invasion hits and we're inching our way towards the summer love in 67, the gates are just wide open. And then we have the era of not only veiled references, people always thought that the Beatles' Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds was a reference to LSD. Turns out it wasn't, but it was nice to think it was at the time. But, more blatant references. The Stones had Mother's Little Helper, which was about suburban moms popping pills, sister morphine a few years later. So by the time we get to the modern era, everybody's just kind of laying it out without any kind of regard for irony or discretion. They're just kind of speaking their minds, unfiltered.
Well, nowadays, it's say whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you hear all kinds of things on the radio, especially in more urban musics that you know, they just blatantly just come right out and say it. You know, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre. I mean, the album was called The Chronic. You know, that was the name of the album.
Well, what does that say about our society? I mean, are we in a post-prohibition era?
Are we in a prohibitive prohibition era? We're still definitely under prohibition for some of these things.
Well, I find it really interesting. I mean, I think it just depends on which vein you're looking at. You know, I mean, obviously Snoop doesn't get a whole lot played on regular radio. And I still, after we were talking about this subject, I actually did hear Tom Petty's Last Dance with Mary Jane, where he says, "I hit my last number, walk to the road." And where he says number, it was pretty obvious, rolled out. But yet you have Steely Dan, Ricky Don't Lose That Number.
Little Feet's got so many.
You know, it's...
Brewer and Shipley, One Toke Over the Line.
Yeah. And you hear those songs on the radio. I mean, there's the classic Puff the Magic Dragon. What is it about? I mean, you have Little Jack of Paper
and Sealing Wax. Is that what that means?
I think it depends on your perspective of it. I mean, there's a lot of people that they are so like that they think, no, you can't take my childhood classic song and turn it into something about drugs. But, you know, I mean.
Well, that's funny, too, because along the way, there have been the inevitable parental scares to accompany all this stuff. You've got, you have this recurring theme of artists being kind of outrageous, and then there's a pushback from parents. Because they think, for some reason, and I'm a parent too, and I understand this thinking, but for some reason they think that one song is going to tip their kid into total, delinquency. And I think we need to give the children a little bit more credit that they're due, and because people are smart. They can discern irony. They can discern what's poetic and what's literal, and I think that for a parent to think that little Johnny listening to some, controversially themed music is going to corrupt him and send him on a life of crime and wind up in the gallows, I just don't buy that.
Yeah, meanwhile, you know, you turn on any modern television shows that are coming on, there's so much violence. All of these themes are current. And then what's even worse is the video games, because it actually puts it into a first-person perspective, you know, and it's the same thing. And is that worse? Is that the same concept as this music? I mean, are we repressing this art because we don't want it to influence people, and yet at the same time, these influences are everywhere. It's everywhere that you look, you see these kinds of things.
Well, maybe it's the multiplicity and the combined impact of everything and not just one little component. I saw a recent study that countered the notion that, hey, parents, sorry, but video games actually ain't all that bad for your kids after all. If a kid's a bad seed, that's one thing. He's going to be a bad seed anyway. But if he is exposed to this influence, and this influence across the culture, maybe. But it still boils down to the parents taking a vested interest in their children and their upraising and showing them what's right and what's wrong, what's real and what's illusory.
Well, you know, I was out in Knoxville just not that long ago, and they had the big radio pumping out the music for the Labor Day Boomsday Festival with the fireworks and everything like that, and heard a song by a woman named Katy Perry that, you know, made me think, okay, let's see, they're obscuring kind of vague drug references by Tom Petty made 10, 15 years ago, but she's up there saying, you know, sun-kissed skin so hot it'll melt your popsicle. I mean, I get the sun-kissed skin is like a euphemism for cancer, but I'm not sure about the popsicle thing. I'm thinking that's probably some sort of veiled reference as well, you know, and I'm thinking, do I want my kid to listen to this? And I look around and there's like 30 people singing along with it, all ages. You know, this is on a family radio station.
Well, when I was a kid, I thought it was kind of cool. I could go in my room and close the door and turn the Steppenwolf's The Pusher on real low because it had some controversial contact and some naughty words. And one time my parents caught me listening to it, and my mama was not happy at all. But, you know, I turned out pretty good, right, guys? Right?
No.
Email us whatitis@wncw.org. How is Fred, in your opinion?
Don't answer that. Well, it's a good thing I was not listening to Queens of the Stone Age feel-good hit of the summer back then, because that might have warped me. The Steppenwolf's The Pusher, I think, actually was a cautionary song, if you really think about it. It was I think Hoyt Axton wrote that, and it was an anti-drugs, anti-pusher thing. John Prine's Sam Stone. That's a brutal, chilling song. For every yin, there's a yang. There were pro songs, you know, Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit. But then you have, like I said, the Neil Young's Needle in the Damage Done. So it's the dark side explored. And I don't know. I think it all balances out, really.
Well, let's just be honest. The addictions are rampant in our culture. Addictions of all sort. And what a lot of this might boil down to is, how do you best address that? Do you address it by pushing it back? Or do you address it by being open to it and saying, all right, you can be here, let's deal with it. I think those are the two main schools of thought.
Yeah, that's a good point.
With this whole conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like we said at the beginning, if you tell people not to do something, they're immediately going to want to do it. And in the popular culture, there's going to be people that want to outline what is going on behind the scenes.
Well, so, yeah, you look at the, you know, Tipper Gore and the whole PMRC. PMRC, is that right?
PMRC, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I mean...
And they're still putting stickers on CDs.
The stickers, you know, was the mid-range there for that. But, you know, I mean, they were pushing for complete, you know, demolition of this whole area of music, you know.
To me, that was just a great excuse to get Frank Zappa in front of Congress. It really was.
But, you know, the fact that it wasn't just him, but John Denver stepping
Absolutely.
Up.
I mean, yeah, we won't talk about Dee Snider. But
yeah, I mean, you know, you look at these different people that all came up there together and, you know.
Oh, yeah, Rocky Mountain High. We forgot about that one.
And stood up for NWA, you know?
Absolutely.
What people don't realize is that the whole PMRC and the stickering of CDs had the unintended result of just making these records real easy for kids to find in stores. Oh, I want that one because it's got the sticker. So thank you to
Singer Gold Star. But does George Carlin's Seven Words, does that have a sticker on it? Or, I mean...
Well, actually, the ruling now is that the curse words can fly over public media. The recent ruling
giving you some curse words?
But no, actually, really, honestly, all you need is just, you know, you can offend one person, the wrong person, and your whole, you know, year will be ruined because of it. So we're still living in polite society here, I believe. Accidentally, some of those words might get broadcast on these and other airwaves. But for the most part, beyond like the stations, or I guess Howard Stern's just on satellite now, right?
Right.
But beyond that sort of show, then I think that most people are going to refrain, at least from the Seven Words. Other references I don't know about. Hey, you know, those references are on these airwaves. You know, there's drinking songs, there's songs about, you know, various recreational drugs and things. Let's just be honest. I mean, they're out there, and, you know, I don't even know sometimes if when I'm playing a song, like what exactly it's going to contain. That's sort of the nature of the beast of what we're doing, is it's sort of music exploration live every day, and you may never know. So you don't even know if we're doing it on purpose or not.
That's true. Well, to that end, I'll add that the whole thing that prompted this discussion initially, that made us start brainstorming, it was one morning when Martin was playing Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and the line, "Be sure to hide the roaches," came over the airwaves, and I just said to myself, wow, I think that might be a good topic to explore. So there you go, you know, the accidental genius.
Yeah, one of the things that I find interesting is, as a person that writes poetry for both adults and children, you know, I write some pretty risque material, but I also write children's poetry. And people often say, you know, that's kind of odd. But one of my favorite writers is Shel Silverstein, who wrote children's poetry and is most well known for that, but also wrote over 800 songs that were cataloged.
And some of them were a little naughty, weren't they?
Yes. And two of the songs that he was best known for were I Got Stoned and I Missed It and The Great Smoke Off.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a frequent contributor to Playboy magazine.
And yes, he got his start after being in the service with Playboy magazine, Hugh Hefner.
Well, Shell was one of the greats, and that's a beautiful dichotomy, too. It just goes to show that a person can express themselves in one way and then in another way, and it doesn't mean they're a deviant, a nice person by day and a deviant by night. It just means they're a full personality, and that's what this is all about, is recognizing the entire, the whole human experience, and not trying to just push part of it away in a corner because it's a little unseemly to certain people.
I think this actually brings up an overarching question of the moral responsibility of art, because there's several different takes that you could take on it, where it's, you know, the personal creation and perspective, where it's the artist themselves feels that they're obliged or obligated to represent themselves and what their beliefs are and what their life is like. And then there's also the fact that art typically is created for an audience, not always, but often is created for an audience. And so then you get into the whole world of audience influence, you get into the world of perspective, you get into the world of communicating ideas. And in that case, you know, does art have a responsibility in order to shape our society in a way that we want to see it grown? Which kind of harkens back to what Joe was saying about, you know, the two perspectives. It's like, do we, if we're dealing with a subject that's uncomfortable in society, do we push back against it and try to prevent it from entering our society? Or do we embrace it and turning it into something that is not taboo in order to make it not weird or in any way, you know, strange and unusual? So art itself has the power to do all of these things. And what is the moral imperative of the artist?
Amen.
Your thoughts are welcome to What It Is at our email address, whatitis@wncw.org. Talking about prohibition themes in music today on Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Barbie Angel, Jay Sanders, and Fred Mills. Until next time.